of the ancient mother, I am the child of the mother of the world. I am the daughter of the ancient mother, I am the child of the mother of the world.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That snippet opening tonight's show is from the single Song to Inanna by the lovely composer and musician right here in L.A. Her name is Lisa Thiel, T-H-I-E-L. Please check out her CDs. Well, I have a great show for you tonight. This week our guests are Kathy Pagano, dishing up the cosmic story for the coming weeks of May, what the stars, moons, and planets have to tell us, followed by the mystic, Dr. Stuart Berlin. Dr. Berlin will be discussing his three books, Sex Magic for the Bar Mitzvah Boy, Sexual Secrets of Tantric Kabbalah, Making Love, and Every Woman a Goddess, Every Man a Hero in Her Service. As you might imagine, there's lots to say, from changing the psychological development of adolescent boys to integration of sexuality and meditation, the brain state of orgasms, introducing the concept of Elohim, a dual gender divinity, oxytocin, making love, much, much more. So we're not shy here, and so don't miss it. But a few housekeeping tidbits first. I am very excited to announce the long-awaited trip to visit Goddess Sites of Turkey in May 2015. That itinerary is being planned as I speak. It is on the drawing board. So if you're interested in being on the tour of a small select group of women and men, we're keeping the group to around 20 or so. So please let me hear from you so I can put you on the list to give you updates. You know, I'm not sure if you know, but Turkey is an incredible melting pot of goddess cultures, a true diamond in the rough. You can really still feel the power of goddess there, unlike many other places I've been that have been overrun with tourists. One last, I visited so many goddess sites aren't even on the beaten path, and we could be there totally alone to do exactly what we wanted to do in terms of ritual, movement, meditation, dream sharing. You know, Turkey is the home to many goddesses, Isis, Kabeli, Mary, Kubaba, Aphrodite, Magna Mater, and many more goddesses, and their museum in Ankara is superb. Then, closer to home, in July, if you're in Nashville, Tennessee, or within driving distance, you might want to know about the Divine Feminine Conference. I am lucky enough to be one of the presenters for this week-long conference, which will be totally awesome. If you go to my Facebook page, scroll down a bit, you will no doubt find a posting. You'll see it's all very pink, and Athena in the replica of her temple, which is actually in Nashville, is the picture you click on for more information about the schedule, the presenters, the pricing, the hotel we'll be in, which I think is the Four Point Sheraton just outside Nashville. This is not your camping event, people. We are not roughing it. We're going to stay in a nice, moderately priced hotel for the conference weekend. We want to be comfortable. Also closer to home, I have several other presentations coming up in the month of May, so let me tell you about those real quick. I'll be at the Dharma Center Bookstore in Whittier doing my presentation on Goddess Sites of Washington, D.C. That's May 17th. Then May 18th, I am at the Big Green Festival here in L.A. called World Fest. It's held in Balboa Park, which is in the San Fernando Valley. Come by, visit my booth. I'm sharing with Abby of Avalon, Hands of Demeter. I think we called it Goddess Spirit Rising. Then May 31st, I'm at the Green Man Store in North Hollywood with a new presentation called Goddess Spirituality, A New Reality for All Humankind. Then Saturday, June 7th, I'm at the Long Beach Woman Spirit Fair in Long Beach, California. I'm going to have a table. Come visit me. I'll have all my books and other delightful items to sell and information to share. So please, friends, write me, Facebook me, email me, send me a message in the chat room with all your contact information, and happy to share all this great information. So first up tonight, we have our astrologer in residence these days, Kathy Pagano. She is here to give us the cosmic story for May. So, Kathy, take it away.
Hi, Karen. Well, it's been quite an intense few weeks, hasn't it?
You're not kidding. I feel like I'm going 90 miles an hour. I'm on the Autobahn in Germany.
Right, I know. Yes, as I don't know if you remember, I'd like to recap a little bit about what we talked about the last time.
Sure.
But, the last time we talked, it was right before the Easter and Passover holidays. It was right when we had the lunar eclipse, and then during that next week, from Sunday, which was Easter Sunday for the Christians, to the next Wednesday, that wonderful grand cross that I talked about was coming into alignment. And the effects of it are so, have been so right out there. One of the things that we talked about a little bit was how immediate the response is from the universe. Right before then, I think it was, the Supreme Court decided that we no longer had to listen to affirmative action when letting students into colleges. I think it was in Michigan. And they said there's no longer any social disparity between the races. And then right away, we had the man here in Nevada, Clive and Bundy, who talked about how black people probably were better off as slaves. And then the owner of the Clippers talking about not wanting his girlfriend to bring black people, to his games. It's so immediate. I love how the heavens are sort of, are sort of working with us to bring it up so that regular people see what's really going on in the world. Because
yes,
so many
yes.
people have been asleep.
Yes, I think so. And, I just hope that keeps happening on more fronts. This patriarchy that's got its boot on so many of our necks, that it begins to reveal its ugliness, when people really understand that we need a new normal.
Yes. Well, I think it is. And just recently in the last day or two, there was the President's Committee on Global Warming, I think it was. I'm not quite sure what the name of the committee is. Came out with its report, and I mean, they even talked about, they said, we're in the middle of it. This is not something that's happening in the future. And if they even talked about what parts of the United States, how global warming will affect each different section of the country. And so they were saying in the Northeast they're going to get more deluges, and in the Southeast they're going to get more hurricanes, and in the West there's going to be a bigger drought. So, I mean, people, it's going to be hard to put your head in the sand after this about global warming. And then, of course, that wonderful show, Cosmos. I forget his name, Tyson. Anyway, he did a thing on global warming last Sunday. So, the issues are coming up. I don't think people can hide in the sand anymore. And in terms of what's happening in the heavens, Uranus, the planet of awakening and of freedom and of rebellion, is in the sign of Aries. And Aries is all about who am I? It's about our identity. And so it's a real wake-up call for everyone. And so even if it didn't feel like anything shifted in your life in the last 3 weeks, don't worry about it. Something cracked open for everybody, unless you're really sound asleep. But everything cracked open, and a different perspective is going to start to really come in. So I don't know if I'm as worried. A lot of people are worried that the U.S. government is going to be taken over by Republicans in this election. But there's surprises in store. The sixth square between Uranus and Pluto, we just had the fifth one as part of this beautiful grand cross. And the square between Uranus and Pluto is the whole cycle from the 60s that I've been talking about. And instead of just two or three of these squares, we're having seven of them, which is unheard of. The cosmos, the heavens, is really talking to us and saying, look, we need to evolve. We need to become conscious. And people need to be part of this evolution, because if not, the world could, you know, the Earth herself is in crisis, and we have to partner with the Earth. So the other thing is that the sixth square is in November, so I'm really voting for the fact that we have to take part in our political discussions, even though a lot of us feel like it's not worth it. I have met so many really spiritual people who seem to think it's not worth it to vote. But if we don't step into the community that we live in and start to bring the light of this new vision in, we are condemning everybody to a slow and painful death, perhaps.
And just to be specific, you know, for the listeners who haven't, you know, look, I know this stuff isn't fun to listen to, but, you know, let me just say briefly, if right now the Republicans control the House, the Democrats have controlled the Senate, so we have really been able to hold them at bay on a federal level. But you can see across the country in all the states that have Republican governors and Republicans in the majority and, in their state Senates and houses, you can see what they've done. They've done nothing but vote against Obamacare. They have done nothing but thwart people's access to vote, which disproportionately affects minorities and women. They have also been going absolutely batshit crazy about women's reproductive health. And we can be certain that they will do the very same thing on the federal level that they are doing on the state level if we lose the Senate to Republicans. So we desperately have to get out there and stand up for ourselves, or it's going to be a bleak few years ahead that it may take us a long time to recover from.
Right. People like Marianne Williamson is running for the House of Representatives out of L.A. There are, you know, regular people need to step up, whether it's on a national level or whether it's on a local level. We can do so much on a local level if we engage. I don't know about you, Karen, but I'm one of the 60s people. I was a teenager and in college in the 60s, and the feeling I got was that the spiritual people, the people who were engaging in healing and spirituality, we sort of walked away from the world in a way. We walked away from the government, and we let this floodgate of conservatism come in. And now we have to be the leaders. We've trained for these 25 or 40 years to become the wise people in our country, and we need to step up and help the young kids, because the younger generation, they're really going to town. They're engaging like we did in the 70s, but with much more knowledge and much more, I don't know what the word is, but passion in a way. Maybe not passion. We were kind of passionate back then. But this is so much of what the cosmic story is about right now. After we had that week, that Easter week of the cross forming, and the lunar eclipse a week ago, we had a solar eclipse in Taurus. Now, eclipses end things and begin things. Solar eclipses are like super powerful new moons. And a solar eclipse in Taurus is all about, we need to look at the Earth in a different way. We need to reconnect to the Earth in a different way. We need to know what we value. Taurus is very much about the sign of values, because it's a very earthy sign. It's the most fixed earthy sign in the whole zodiac. So it's really about manifestation, what we build. The age of Taurus was when Egypt built its beautiful pyramids and the beautiful buildings that have lasted so long. And so Taurus is about being very concrete and manifesting things. And, of course, if we're going to bother to build something, we need to build it on good values. And so last week at the solar eclipse, It was really about planting the seeds of what we value, what's important to us, such as community and peace and beauty. We need to create a more beautiful society, both inside and out.
Absolutely.
We need, you know, the stories our culture tells us out of Hollywood are so ugly. As a Jungian psychologist, I promise you that bad, violent images affect people. I'm sorry, you know, I know that a lot of people, but it does. That's how you affect people, by images. That's why the Nazis used the swastika. It was a sign of fertility. It was a beautiful image. And now it's become an image of death. And that's what our whole media does and our advertising does. It turns really important images into commodities. And
right.
We need to reclaim our imagination right once again. And so we need to be out there telling different stories. And that's kind of what this whole Grand Cross is about. It's asking each of us to step up and become responsible for our world, not just for our personal world, our house and our job, but for each other, our community, and also the world.
Absolutely.
So this is the part of the cosmic story. This is what's going on. Now, next week, we're going to have a full moon. And so here we are. It's May, the lusty month of May, especially back east where I'm from in New England. The lilacs are just coming out. The forsythia, the pussy willows are all out. The trees are starting to put out their leaves. And there's beauty all around. Okay? Behold, there is beauty all around us. And that's what May and Taurus is about. Taurus says, look at the paradise we've been given. And then you get the full moon, and so you always have a full moon in the opposite sign, and opposite Taurus is Scorpio. So we've just celebrated Beltane from May 1st to about May 6th, and Beltane is the power gate of summer in the Wheel of the Year, and it's when the fairies come out and all of the beautiful, you know, it brings life back into the world. And opposite Beltane, opposite Taurus, is Scorpio and Samhain, All Hallows Eve, the gateway of death. So in this next week, we need to contemplate what needs to die so that new life can grow.
Interesting.
And we need to, you know, we need to begin to live a symbolic life. And it makes it so much more interesting. At least I think so. Being a
well,
dream
you know,
person,
it takes
you know?
it takes the mundane out of it, doesn't it? I think
it really does
take us off that hamster wheel and infuses our lives with so much more meaning and creativity. And you know, let me ask you about Scorpio. I saw something pass one of my emails about Scorpio. This moon coming up that Scorpio affects. It's also about trust issues, too. Is that right?
Yes. Well, you see, Scorpio, whereas Taurus is an earth sign, Scorpio is a water sign. And whereas Taurus is about personal values, Scorpio is about values we share. So right now, it's, you know, Scorpio is very much the sign where we have to deal with the hurt feelings that we've all gathered and inherited, whether from past lives or from this life. And so it is about trust, because basically Scorpio deals with the betrayals and the hurt and the death and the terror and the violence that we've had to endure. And how do we overcome that? But really, it isn't even overcome. How do we integrate and understand the meaning of those experiences instead of saying, how could God do that to us? And really, does God have anything to do with it? The goddess and the god, if you will, they're energies that we can invoke, but they don't tick on us. They don't sit there and say, good, let's kill people. What happens is they give us the energy to deal with life and death issues. So like Persephone, who has come back to us as the spring maiden at this spring equinox, at this Scorpio full moon, she looks back almost to her husband Hades, you know, Pluto in the underworld, in the death world, if you will, and remembers what it is that we had to give up. What did we have to let die? And one of those issues is mistrust. We have to stop mistrusting other people. And the way that you do that is to learn to trust yourself, right? And that's what the goddess gives us. The goddess says, especially to women, trust your feelings, trust your instincts, trust your imagination. We're not going to lead you wrong. And
right.
Our patriarchal culture has taught us to mistrust everything that isn't logical. And so what happens is we mistrust people. Like a lot of my clients will come and it will be about love, of course, or work. But, you know, in terms of love, and of course we have Venus and Mars ruling Scorpio, Taurus and Scorpio. So it is about how we connect to people and how we connect to our passions. And right now Venus is in Aries and it's going to hit at this next full moon next Wednesday. It's going to be at exactly the same degree as Uranus was in the Grand Cross, so exactly at that 14 degree of the cardinal sign that all those planets were at. And basically the heart is going to pick up on this new revolutionary energy, and
wow,
we're going to be passionate about it. And, in terms of love, we have to remember that patriarchy sold us a bill of goods, and I will raise my hand. I am a romantic. But the whole idea of romantic love, that there's only one person for us, one soulmate for us, and if we can't have that one person, we'll die, have to go. Because soulmates are here to be a mirror for us, definitely. But sometimes at the end of the day, the mirror is done. You're done with that. And we can have, we need to be looking at ourselves and we need to love ourselves first. And then we can understand other people's issues.
Absolutely.
So
we're in a healthier position, I think. You know, when we love ourselves, we're in a healthier place to then let the love of a relationship come in.
Yes. And the allowing that not everybody is at the same level, I guess, of understanding. And a lot of times we can be too much for people. Sometimes men have a hard time with the fullness of who women can be. And as women are starting to stretch and find our goddess nature and that mysterious power that we seem to have and our willingness to go into mystery, we do that so much easier than men sometimes, to go into mystery and allow it. Because feelings are mysterious and intuitions are mysterious
It can be scary.
And especially because our culture has told us it's not just scary, but it's irrelevant.
Mm.
And that's why we're out of balance.
Very true.
You know, one of the things I think is wrong with patriarchy is it's afraid of death. It refuses to die. Like the god Saturn in ancient times, in the ancient Greek myths, he swallowed his children rather than let them be born, for fear that they would replace him. There is a fear in patriarchy of the end, and I think it's because they believe in that, sort of like a Hollywood movie script. This is the beginning, this is the middle, and this is the end. And then it's the end.
Whereas
a lot of spirituality knows that it's a cycle.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and I know when I spoke to some scholars on the show, too, about patriarchy and how patriarchy, evolved and took over from goddess, you know, one of the women said to me, part of it was man not being, humanity, but men, too, who were out of touch with the mysteries, out of touch with those cycles of life, who were really trying to beat their mortality. You know, if they could deny goddess, they could deny the cycles of life, and somehow they deluded themselves into thinking that they wouldn't die. I mean, I know it doesn't make sense, but I guess it's on some subconscious level.
Right. I don't know if it's a fear that's in our DNA because the crazy Christians, you know, said that we're all going to go to hell or at least burn in purgatory, so people don't want to, die. I think it's partly people thinking that when you die, that's it. there's nothing. They have no conception of, I think it's like the people who are against choice, pro-choice people. They don't realize that a baby has a soul. And if it's not the right time to incarnate in a body, and that is between a mother and a child, the two souls, take it from me. I have four kids. When they give me trouble, I used to say, I was here first. You chose me. Chill out. But, you know, it's like, you know, you could have picked another mother. But, you know, I don't believe these people really believe in the concept of a soul. And so most people are living a very surface idea of what religion is. And unfortunately, our religions have kept them that way. They don't understand the deepness and fullness of a spiritual belief.
Well, yeah, they just want to keep a bunch of sheeple. We're starting to. I know you have a class at 6:30, so I just want to give you a heads up. We've got like 5 minutes. So, how did you want to wrap it up, Kathy?
Okay. Well, you know, so this is what we need to. So, in a way, this spring is a new birth for all of us. Okay, and as I said, something shifted for everybody, even if you haven't felt it this last 3 weeks. And so the zodiacs, the way the sun travels through the different signs, our seasons, the wheel of the year, really gives us a hint about how to grow life. So right now we're in the beautiful month of Taurus. We're in the month of May. And so it would help people to just get into their bodies, get in tune with Mother Earth. I think that we're supposed to reconnect to the Earth, not just, oh, let me go lie out in the sun or take a walk, but I think we have to start to talk to the Earth. We have to start to interact with the Earth, Mother. We have to, like in Pandora in Avatar, we have to realize that we are energetically connected with Mother Earth. And we have to ask her what our part is. So Taurus is such a wonderful time to do that. Because then it begins to ask us, well, what do you value? What makes you feel worthy of being alive? And next week at the full moon, as you look at that beautiful full moon, it's really about what needs to die in our lives, but also what needs to die in our society. Because there are other things going on that we haven't talked about. And it's very much, especially for Americans, about what is dying in our culture and how can we bring new life to it.
Okay. Well, you are going to be back with us in a few weeks, so we will pick up where we left off. But I think you had something special you wanted to offer listeners.
Yes. For anyone who is listening, I would be very happy to do an astrological reading for you. And if you say that when you email me that you heard me on Karen's show, I will send you a free copy of my book, which is about the goddess who returns at the changing of the ages. It's a Jungian symbolic study of the woman clothed with the sun who stands on the moon and is crowned with stars and who gives birth to this new age. And she is us. And so if you're into understanding symbolism, if you're into understanding how you can connect to your own wisdom and so that you make wise choices in your life, I hope you like it. So just write to me at Kathy with a C, at wisdom-of-astrology.com and tell me that you heard me on Karen's show. And you will get a free book with an astrological reading.
Would you give your email one more time, Kathy?
Certainly, Kathy with a C, at wisdom-of-astrology.com.
Okay, and anyone who maybe is confused by that, just email me and I will forward your email to Kathy. Well, Kathy, thank you so much. I know you have a class of dream folks waiting for you, so say hello to everyone for me and have a wonderful class.
You too. Thank you, Karen. Good evening.
Okay, good night. Have a great week.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Well, If you're a regular listener, you know what that sound means. We are crossing the threshold into the second part of the show, where we are going to be talking to Dr. Stuart Berlin. And I want to thank him for his patience, and we're going to get to him in just a minute or two. But I have a couple things I need to share first. A shout-out to Marie, who sent me a message on Facebook. She says, "Greetings from far away, Karen. I'm living in Chile now. I used to live in South Africa. Great to hear about the powerful awakening in the U.S. In 2001, I published a book on female spirituality in my mother tongue, Afrikaans. The process of writing was healing. Finally started doing Reiki, reflexology, now once again writing, this time about female sexuality. Your commitment and dedication inspires me. Keep your spirit strong and free. Gaia bless you and your work." Marie, thank you so much for reaching out, telling me about yourself and letting me know you get something from what I'm doing here. It means a lot. You are gas in my tank. And from Pat, one of our regular longtime listeners, she sent me something funny. I want to just share this with you. I think I can get by with talking about it because I am from the South after all. This is called a funny little thing here called Redneck Pagan. So let me read this to you. I think it's just so silly. Here are some signs that you yourself may be a redneck pagan. If your ceremonial garb consists of cutoffs and a tube top, if you think a family tradition is a dating club, if you've reached third degree but not the third grade, if your coven secret names for the god and goddesses or cooter and sweet cheeks, you may be a redneck pagan. If your ceremonial chalice says Budweiser on it, if chewing tobacco is considered a sacred herb, if your circle dance includes the words do-si-do, if your altar pentacle is a photo of John Wayne Starr on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you may be a redneck pagan. Now, if your coven chose its high priest at a belching contest, if they chose their high priestess at a wet t-shirt night, if your anointing oil smells like Old Spice, if you have ever refilled your chalice from a keg, well, you might just be a redneck pagan. And if your outdoor circle has defunct washing machines for quarter altars, if the cakes and wine are done with a Bowie knife and a can of Foster's and a Little Debbie's cake, if your pantheon includes Yukon Jack, Jim Beam, and the St. Pauli girl, well, you might just be a redneck pagan. If your ritual music has ever included Johnny Cash singing Ring of Fire, if you think the Wiccan reed is good for making twig furniture, if you believe a pentagram is a Western Union message to five people, and if your altar cloth says Holiday Inn, you might just be a redneck pagan. And if your goddess picture says Miss September at the bottom, or your god statue looks a little too much like Elvis, if you've ever written a spell on the back of a Denny's menu, if you've ever canceled a coven meeting to watch a pay-per-view wrestling on TV, well, guess what? You might just be a redneck pagan. And finally, if you have ever called the National Enquirer because you raised a potato that resembled the Willendorf goddess, or if you have cast a love spell on livestock, you are definitely a redneck pagan. I'm sorry, that was just too cute. I had to share it. I hope that didn't offend anyone, any of my listeners in the South. Please laugh at it. I'm from the South. I am laughing. I think it is funny, funny, funny. So, one last thing, and then we are getting to Dr. Stuart Berlin.
The psychic state is the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet. It's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth.
Our ancestors understood that the animal and divine were all connected. They were together, that there wasn't a separation. And that's what we are trying to return to, is that sense that our animal nature is divine. It doesn't get in the way of the divine. It gets us closer to it.
What's your idea of being fully alive as a human being? Because that's what's really spiritual. Write it down. Start writing your own Bible if you want.
Sex is sacred. And by that, I just mean sweaty, fun, happy sex.
I Well, that was Serena Roney Dougal, PhD, speaking in Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia. Dancing with Gaia explores the connection between earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the goddess as Gaia. It features 15 visionaries like Serena who give us tools to feel the life of the planet within ourselves. And the DVD comes with a 45-page mini book and costs just $20. And you can get your own copy at dancingwithgaia.com. And I want to thank listeners for their patience with commercials. I know they're not our favorite thing, but I thank your indulgence. And I also thank Joe Carson for running her commercials here because it helps me pay to have the radio show because, as you may or may not know, I do pay for the airtime to give wonderful guests like you're become accustomed to hearing to give them a chance to share their wisdom and insight with everyone. So if you want to help me in my efforts, please do send a donation of any amount to my PayPal account that you can access from my website, KarenTate.com. Just go to KarenTate.com. Once you're there, go to the Goddess Store page, scroll all the way down to the bottom, past the books and the Goddess greeting cards and the Systra that we have for sale, and use one of the PayPal buttons for a donation of any amount. You know what? I am happy to take $5 because $5 here and there and here and there, it all adds up. So, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Stuart Berlin. He graduated from Cardozo High School at 16, Hamilton College at 20, NYU School of Medicine at 24, and Children's Hospital of Los Angeles at 27. He calls himself a mystic, and he created his own path of Tantric Kabbalah as a response to the losses in his life. He explains Tantra means to weave and Kabbalah means to receive. So he wove together what he has received, which is, those two together and has created a Jewish mysticism, evolutionary biology, quantum mechanics, and neurobiology into a unique new form of hierogamos, or sacred marriage of the Elohim. And as part of his mystic experiences, Stuart has had three visions from the Elohim, including one that resulted in a U.S. patent for the diagnostic use of apocrine sweat. If that's not right, I'll let him correct me later. And apocrine sweat comes from our armpits and groin area. Stuart predicts that new cancer biomarkers will be found in apocrine sweat, as well as biomarkers for STDs and ovulation. And discovering the ovulation protein biomarker will end the need for contraception, as women would be able to self-test and know when they're ovulating and can either refrain from sex the 2 days of the month when she's capable of conceiving, or she can choose to have sex and conceive with whomever she so chooses. He goes on to say testing this sweat for ovulation and STDs will result in a new sexual revolution that goes beyond the effect of the birth control pill in the 60s. He calls it the union of sexuality, spirituality, and science. Now, we are going to be talking about Stuart's three books tonight, which are, I hope we can get to them all. Maybe they'll overlap. First is Sex Magic for the Bar Mitzvah Boy, Sexual Secrets of Tantric Kabbalah, Making Love, that's the second, and the third, I really like this title. It says so much, Every Woman a Goddess, Every Man a Hero in Her Service. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful summary you gave. And I also want to say I so appreciated the first speaker, Kathy. She was spot on. I agreed with everything she said, especially that it's all about telling stories and symbolism. And as a mystic, I tell the stories that the Great Mother and Crone Mother Earth tell to me.
Wonderful. Well, and you know, you think back, you know, before everyone was literate, that's how we communicated, you know. That's
exactly
why the tarot cards are so potent. Symbolism, you can look at a symbol and it can speak a thousand words kind of a thing, you know. I think, you know, symbolism in a way is as important or maybe more important sometimes than words even, and you can communicate with people, you know, who don't even speak the same language through symbols.
And not only that, you can communicate over time, and it's communication over time that is so important. You know, people talk about Judaism as being a patriarchal religion. Judaism did not become patriarchy until the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem by the Babylonians and the exile in Babylon, which was an extremely patriarchal religion. If you go back to Abraham and Sarah, at the very beginning of Judaism, some 3,800 years ago, they practiced sex magic together as brother and sister, husband, wife, priest, and priestess. In the Torah, it talks about Abraham bringing Sarah to Pharaoh in Egypt to have sex magic with him, although the Torah, which was written so many years afterwards, couldn't understand it, but at least they copied what the scroll said. And this happens in many other places in the Torah, not only with Abraham and Sarah and Pharaoh, but with Abimelech of the Philistines, and then, if that's not enough, with Isaac and Rivka. So we know that. We also know that Solomon, when he built the temple, he didn't build it as a slaughterhouse for killing animals. He had concubines and wives, something like 1,000 put together, and obviously he was doing sex magic as well. I think the key...
Well, wait a second, but let me just, before we go too far away, I want to address what you said about Judaism not being patriarchal in the beginning. I want to remind listeners, remember, you know, in the temple, Asherah was there. She had her symbol that was a tree. The women were baking cakes to the Queen of Heaven. So in Christianity, I think in the very beginning, wasn't patriarchal either. You had women who were supporting Jesus' ministry. You had lots of women who had assets in the ancient world who were actually building churches. It wasn't until later patriarchy starts to affect both Judaism and Christianity, I think. Do you agree, Stuart?
Actually, I think that patriarchy started earlier than that. Certainly, all archaeological excavations in Israel show statues to Asherah in every household prior to the destruction of the temple. So you're completely correct about that. But in the very first part of the Torah, in Genesis 1, it says that humanity, there's no names. Adam and Eve don't come until Genesis 2. In Genesis 1, man and woman are created together in our image, the image of the Elohim. And even though they start using the word he there, the concept of God as masculine is not Jewish. The concept of God as masculine is a falsehood, and it's the most important falsehood that needs to be overturned. Human beings are not masculine or feminine. Every human being is both masculine and feminine, and that's the story that people need to learn. That's the story that Jung tells with his story of the archetypes. My concept of the Elohim are very similar to Jung's concept of archetypes, except my concept adds the divine aspect to it.
Right. Well, and you find this idea in lots of different cultures. I mean, I know when I was researching my Sacred Places of Goddess book, I believe it was down in South America or Mexico, and I think it was the Aztec goddess had a feminine and a masculine aspect. The feminine aspect had a name, the masculine aspect had a name, but when they came together as one, it also had a name. I think it was something like Omitotal or something like that. And I think about Parvati and Shiva, you know, how you see the Hindu goddesses sometimes where they're half feminine and, you know, they're statues, or we'll even see them sometimes with half of the statue masculine, half of the statue feminine. You know, it seems like this was an idea in the oldest of the old times that got swept under the rug.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, do you think it got swept under the rug as simply, a political means for control, or would you
think it got swept? I think it got swept under the rug because Bronze Age man was afraid of women and afraid of women's sexuality, and I think that the most important way to understand is to understand human evolution and think in evolutionary terms. And what happened was a comet hit the Earth 12,800 years ago, which wiped out the large animals that sustained hunter-gathering. Except for the bison, all the megafauna went extinct. Humanity also went extinct. And in response to that, our crone mothers, the postmenopausal women, created the means of production. Agriculture, by giving love to plants. Animal husbandry, by giving love to animals. And that is what changed the world at that point. After 3,000 years of not having an outlet for male testosterone, men created patriarchy to take the power away from women, to take decision-making away from our crone mothers, and to separate love from the means of production, which has given us economics.
All right, so let's talk about that a little bit. And I so appreciate having a knowledgeable man like you on the show to have these kinds of conversations. Why do you think, you said men were afraid of women. Is it because, I'll just come out and say it. You know, I think women, to a certain extent, can maybe have a hold on men or can control men with their sexuality. Was that the fear or was it something else?
Well, I can't really say what it was thousands of years ago because I may have been there in a past life, but I don't totally remember. But I can tell you that there are two kinds of sexuality for human beings. There's adrenaline sex, which is, wham, bam, thank you, man, patriarchal sex, where penis and vagina is the whole thing. And then there's another form of sex that most people never heard of, which is oxytocin sex, which is inside every single woman's body. Now, evolutionarily, the only explanation for that is that there is an overwhelming value to that. Men need to experience oxytocin sex through a woman, through serving her sexuality, facilitating her expanded orgasms, not ejaculating, and learning how to use oxytocin in his brain so that he can share that altered state of consciousness where the ego comes in contact with your own soul or soul name and then the Elohim. And so men, the story of Lilith is the turning point, and it's a midrash that overturns Genesis 1. In Genesis 1, it says that man and woman are created together in the divine image, which is both male and female. So how did Bronze Age Jewish men overturn that? They said that the woman in Genesis 1 was Lilith, that she wouldn't do sex the way Adam wanted to do sex, and because of that, she was a demon, and she'd steal children and kill children until people became afraid. And essentially, women were disenfranchised both as God and sexually. Just as story remakes something, you can change the story by saying Lilith is, in fact, female sexuality, oxytocin sex, and every woman needs to own her own sexuality, not be owned by her father, not be owned by her husband, and able to do whatever she wants with her body. Now, she may choose to be monogamous. She may choose to have many lovers. She may choose to be with herself. She may choose to be with women. She can choose whatever she wants. It's her body. And that is the underlying root of patriarchy. Controlling the womb, using women as baby factories to make slaves and soldiers. You overturn that, patriarchy is gone in one generation.
Well, it's amazing, because what you just said, I let me see, how do I want to say this? It has been so crazy lately in the last few years with right-wing Republicans going after contraception, going after, you know, abortion, going after, you know, women's reproductive rights. I would not have thought 10 years ago I would ever be hearing this, but it is so relevant. It's almost as if these Bronze Age men have come, you know, have reincarnated, and they are the Tea Party. They are the Republicans of today.
Exactly. I completely agree with you, but it's the death throes of patriarchy. I totally agree with Kathy. Patriarchy is dying, and have you ever seen a cornered dying animal?
They fight. Yeah.
They fight. And patriarchy is fighting. But
when they're the most dangerous, you know? I think that's when they're the most dangerous, too, because they don't have anything to lose.
But there's something new now that there has never been before, and that's science. There are three periods in human evolution. The first, humans evolved as human beings about 200,000 years ago as Homo sapiens sapiens. And from that time to about 40,000 years ago, humans lived as animals, human animals. The archaeological remains they left behind are no different than our Homo heidelbergensis ancestors. What happened 40,000 years ago? You have the goddess sculptures. The Willendorf, the newer one that was found in Germany. These are not minor fertility goddesses. These are crones. These are postmenopausal women. My favorite sexual partners for my entire life have been postmenopausal women. I know what postmenopausal women's bodies look like. The breasts of postmenopausal women are like the Willendorf Venus. A pregnant woman, a gravid uterus, goes front to back. Weight from a lifetime goes from side to side. And the mound of Venus in the postmenopausal woman also looks much different. It's a very powerful sexual organ, which is why women don't achieve sexual maturity until menopause. And in fact, today in Beverly Hills, you have doctors doing surgeries on women who are afraid of growing older, who don't want that mound of Venus and want to have an operation to get rid of it. So It was postmenopausal women who brought us into human culture, which is, of course, the main aspect of humanity, which is we are freed from biological evolution as the primary determinant of our survival, and we have cultural evolution. So from about 40,000 years ago until about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago, depending on where in the world you live, we lived as hunter-gatherers in nature's love. And the women, the people who made the important decisions were crones, the postmenopausal women. At many of the temples that Maria Gimbutas talks about, there were no grave goods. There are a postmenopausal woman and her daughter buried together underneath the temple. And then what happened was when 3,000 years of abundance, which is really the golden age of humanity, under the goddess, under postmenopausal women, you had men who had nothing to do, no outlet for their testosterone, and you had money. You had wealth. And so that fostered greed, and then you had violence. And the turning point for that was the creation of bronze weapons and the domestication of the horse. The Middle East at that time was the Garden of Eden, was a paradise. It was the Fertile Crescent. What made the Fertile Crescent go away? Cutting down trees, which brought drought. Why did they cut down trees? To make enough fire to make bronze. And we have been having the same exact problem, only worsened by technology. They cut down trees in the Middle East, then in Greece, then in Italy, then France and Germany, then England. They came to the United States or to America to get trees. Then it became whale oil, then it became oil under the ground. And all of this combustion is now poisoning the planet. And that combined with overpopulation are the main issues that we face. But it is also something good, because for someone to change in their own life, they usually have to see that their life has fallen apart. And then they look at themselves and they make changes. That is where humanity is now as a society. And so the way to do that is to end the patriarchal thought disorder and for human beings to be what they were intended to be, which is the consciousness of humanity, the stewards, your first guest, Kathy, was talking about listening to Crone Mother Earth. That's exactly what we need to do. And she is talking to us. She's talking to us when a huge ice sheet falls off of Antarctica and every part of the United States is affected by all these changes.
You know, you are so eloquent. I just love hearing you tie all of those years, into 3 or 4 minutes, and it makes such perfect sense. I mean, this is the knowledge that all of the world needs to know, needs to hear. You know, I don't know whether you've seen me say it on Facebook or not, because occasionally we talk on Facebook, but, you know, I believe we are the cognitive minority, you know. In ancient times, when the scientists were trying to tell the church that the earth wasn't flat and, the planets revolved around the sun, and the church said, no, you're crazy, we're going to throw you in jail. Well, they were the cognitive minority. You know, I think the founding fathers of our country might have been the cognitive minority of their time. You know, they were smart enough to know that there needed to be a separation between church and state. You know, they were men of the Enlightenment. And now I think we're the cognitive minority. You know, it's like I feel like we have the true answers, and we're waiting for the rest of the world to catch up to this knowledge that, you know, has just been swept beneath the rug.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. The founding fathers were deists. They were not Christians. One of the most brilliant of them all was Thomas Paine, and he was attacked as an atheist. He wasn't an atheist. In fact, he used reason to defend spirituality, but not religion. He said that if you have a vision, then it's only good for you. And everyone needs to have their own vision, which means everyone needs to listen to the Elohim, or the archetypes in their brain, which is the function of sex magic. Because in sex magic, in an oxytocin state that is shared by two or more individuals, you have tremendous suggestibility, tremendous neuroplasticity. Oxytocin is made in the hypothalamus, released into the bloodstream, but in the hypothalamus itself, which is the control center of the brain, it changes the dial of the sensitivity of the neuron to have an action potential. And that means that everything is amplified. So when people are in the sex magic state, they can literally determine the course of their brain's development. And that's how creativity is strengthened and stimulated. We are supposed to be creative beings. We're not supposed to be slaves and drones.
Right. And that's what we are right now. You know, we're just consumers. You know, that's all they really want us to be. They want us to be sheeple. They want us to be consumers. No critical thinking. Just keep purchasing. So, you know, the corporations keep making money. I want to talk more about the Kabbalah and the sex magic, mm-hmm. and the science of it and the sex of it. But, you know, I don't often get to someone who knows the Kabbalah. So I want to ask you something about the Kabbalah. My husband and I took a couple, we studied at the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles for, I don't know, a year and a half. And I went there because they talked about the sacred feminine. You know, they talked about caring and sharing. They a lot of the things that sounded very sacred feminine to me came out of their mouth. But mm-hmm. what was something I always suspected, and they would never admit, and I wonder if they knew, these ideals that they had about the caring, about the sharing, they still say crazy stuff like, you know, Lilith was the head of Satan's army, but they would always talk about these ideals that they said came from, you know, the old rabbis, you know, the first old rabbis of Kabbalah. But I got to tell you, Stuart, the stuff that they were saying came from their old rabbis, I thought maybe came from matriarchal or matrilineal societies that maybe these old rabbis just picked up and thought, well, you know what, this is some wisdom here, you know, and maybe they just sort of, you know, got credit for it because, you know, that they began to teach it. My only question is, do you think it's true? I mean, do you think there's a chance that these old rabbis of Kabbalah, these old mystics, were really learning from the Crone Mothers?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's kind of complex, and I think your intuition confirms my personal experience and belief as well, that Judaism is at its root a goddess religion. Now, Abraham and Sarah lived in Ur, and they traveled to Canaan, and in Mesopotamia at that time is when the cult of Lilith and Ishtar were at its height in Mesopotamia. That's when the goddess temples were definitely functioning, where even though it was still a patriarchal society where the priestess of Ishtar had sex, sacred sex with the king to ensure the fertility of the land, it was still, the priestess was honored and given power. Abraham and Sarah did exactly that. And so Abraham and Sarah had that influence of Mesopotamia, and I believe that they were completely within that. The god that Abraham worshipped is El Shaddai. Shaddai in the Hebrew for breath. El Shaddai is the many-breasted goddess that you see depicted in art on Crete with like 40 breasts around her torso. El Shaddai also can be translated as creator, creatrix, destroyer, and rebirth. And the concepts of the fear of death as the another of the root evils of patriarchy is absolutely true. But Abraham didn't have that problem because he worshipped the El Shaddai, who included death and rebirth as part of the normal natural cycle of life, which is what you see in nature. So there's nothing to fear. There's no fear of non-existence. And consciousness is still not understood scientifically. And the change in consciousness that comes through sex magic and the high oxytocin state is a deep part of it.
Okay.
Should I continue, or do you want to ask another question?
Well, no, that's okay. I mean, I guess maybe you sort of answered it when you said, you suspected that maybe, you know, ancient Judaism did come from goddess culture. You know, I think
absolutely.
That's sort of
there's no question about that. There's
yeah.
no question about that. In Jewish tradition, Solomon is the wisest of all Jews, and he created a temple, and he was doing sex magic. And then, you know, almost 600 years later, when the Torah was actually written down in a final form, some of that was left out, but it's in the Song of Solomon, which talks about Israel and God having sex together. And,
right.
you know, people would always say, it's a metaphor. No, it's not a metaphor. The path to spiritual development takes place within the human brain through oxytocin, altered states of consciousness, which is where you experience the gods and goddesses personally, the Elohim. Your soulmate is not another person. Your soulmate is your own soul. Your soulmate is the Elohim that live inside of you. And when two people come together in expanded ecstasy and bliss, orgasmic states that last for an hour or longer on a regular basis, I live with my crone mother partner, who is 71 and I am 57, and we've shared sex magic every day for, this is in our ninth year, and you don't get tired of someone when your brains mesh like that. The disease of our sexuality is that men get tired of women, men want younger women. Why do men want younger women? Because the older women know them too well.
I've often suspected that, you know, older women expect too much, you know, they want them to be better versions of themselves, and they don't have to work as hard with younger women.
Right. And younger women are unable to determine their, incompetence sexually.
Well, we have probably 45 minutes, so I want to talk a little bit about each of your books. So let's start with Sex Magic for the Bar Mitzvah Boy. You know, that
okay.
when you it's so funny, that title is so very misleading because it sounds like you're it just sounds like you're going to take the Bar Mitzvah Boy out, you know, and have him have his first encounter. But you're actually talking about something very deep and important about, you know, changing the psychological development of adolescent boys. So talk about that a little bit, because I think that would be something that would be really important for young men that doesn't happen today, I don't think.
Well, what I wrote in that book is I'm re-describing my own personal development and how I came to be the way I am. I've been with many women, and I can't clone myself, you know. And women want men like me, and so they have to have the next generation. And my clone mother, Cheryl, that I live with, who is 71 and is a retired English teacher, she saw that in her high school students, when the time the boys got to be juniors and seniors, they were lost. They were gone. They were already patriarchal in their minds. Now, how did they get that way? Because if you go to any playground and see 4-year-olds and 5-year-old boys, they share love with their mother as well as their mother shares with them. They are good at it. They are skilled at it. They love. They know how to love. But what happens is they go to school, they get taken over by the bullying system of patriarchy, they're told that they can't feel, they can't cry, and they become toughened up and they lose their ability to share emotions. They lose the ability to use oxytocin, and oxytocin is replaced by adrenaline, which is fear. So how do you change that development? Well, what is it that adolescent boys do more than anything else? They masturbate. Now, almost all religious training tells them that they shouldn't do that. In Judaism, they actually don't tell them not to masturbate. What they say is not to spill seed. That's fascinating. Not to ejaculate. It doesn't say don't masturbate. It says don't ejaculate.
So you can take it all the way up to the end, in other words.
In other words, and that's training. That's training. That's how I learned to control my penis the way I control my hand. I only ejaculate when I want to ejaculate. I used control of ejaculation for 14 years with the mother of my youngest son and never ejaculating inside of her unless she was on her period as birth control successfully. She's had 4 kids. I fathered 3 kids. We're both very fertile. It can be done. So, how do you do that? Well, there are specifics in the book on the techniques of it, but what's more important is what's going on in the mind. Now, if you read a lot of physiology books, they'll tell you that oxytocin and testosterone are incompatible. That's false. And I know it's false because it's false in my life. So if you use the mantra of my sexual path, which is a prayer in Hebrew that goes, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, and the translation of that is, Blessed art thou, our Lord and Goddess, our Lord and Goddess are one, which is a prayer for the unification of masculine and feminine. That is what the boy is meditating on while he's staying hard and not ejaculating. And what that does is it allows his brain to learn how to use oxytocin and testosterone at the same time and inoculate him from the single unitary masculine consciousness.
Now, wait. Let me make sure I understand what you just said. By saying that prayer and sort of taking in those concepts that the prayer, that the words suggest, that in itself makes a difference. I'm trying to understand it. So, I mean, that's different than, say, looking at a girl in the Playboy book?
He's not looking at a girl in the Playboy book.
I realize he's not. You know, he's masturbating, he's saying that prayer, but I guess I'm saying, are those words that powerful?
Yes, they are. That is the, those words are the essence of my temple, of my spiritual path. It is a prayer that induces a meditative state. It brings someone to what I call liminal time, and all of the intentions that I have been doing in my life for over 20 years are part of that. And that's where they go. And so they learn to have their penis and their erection and their sexuality in service of the divine feminine, which in Hebrew is called the Shekhinah. So we talked about Asherah, and she was present in every household in Israel prior to the destruction of the temple. Then from the building of the second temple, which Cyrus of Persia allowed, you had a period of very severe patriarchy. What happened then is the Romans destroyed the temple, the Jewish people lost their homeland, they lost their military tradition, and they started talking about the Shekhinah, the divine feminine. These are the rabbis that the Kabbalah Center is talking about in the first few centuries of the Common Era. So the Shekhinah has no image. The boy is not looking at an image, because when he meets the woman who represents the Shekhinah for him, whatever she looks like will be that image. What he is relating to is an image, is an imageless name, the Shekhinah, and he therefore puts his sexuality in service to the great mother goddess, the Shekhinah, to El Shaddai, the many-breasted one.
So let me say something here, and I'm just connecting these dots in my head, and if this doesn't make sense to you, feel free to tell me. But I'm thinking, if a boy comes up with, you know, and connects sex to the divine feminine, this sacred sexuality, I seriously doubt he's going to be the kind of boy that's going to abuse women and be the abuser and you know, do, you know, domestic violence and rape and all of these other sorts of things. Or am I drawing the wrong conclusions?
No, you're drawing exactly the right conclusion. He's being inoculated against patriarchy because he's learning that sex is in service to the divine feminine. And since the greatest heroism in humanity is to have a baby, that, you know, the idea that killing people with swords or howitzers or machine guns is brave is ridiculous. It's just stupid. Human beings are the most precious thing that have ever been on this planet, and we shred them and kill them on a regular basis. It's nonsense. It's insanity. But if a boy learns that his sexuality is tied to the Divine Mother, then he will not be like that, and he also won't develop the divine unitary, he won't develop the unitary masculine ego. He will then be open to receive the Shekhinah within him, because the Shekhinah that he's making love to as he is training himself not to ejaculate exists in his own brain. She's an archetype within his brain that the normal male ego can't get to, which is why most men have all that problem with mystery and intuition and receiving creative ideas. This will train the boy to be able to receive them and to see that in the women who he comes in contact with later.
Now, you called it the unitary what? The unitary, unitary? I lost my question now. Tell me what you called it, the unitary what?
The unitary masculine ego. See,
the unitary masculine ego. So that is the unitary
consequence. The unitary masculine ego is a consequence that, according to people like Julian James, historically, the ego only shows up about 3,000 years ago. And if you read in the Torah, that's when you have the end of prophecy. Prophecy kind of came to an end. And most of the religions, like Christianity and Judaism, say that there are no more prophets because they want people to do what they say. They want to be as sheeple. If you speak to Shekhinah in your consciousness, in your dreams, while you're having sex magic, you don't care what somebody else tells you to do because you're connected to Source.
Right.
What did telling people that God was male and singular had an effect on the human brain that created a singular male consciousness. By teaching bar mitzvah boys to practice sex magic and meditation, they will be prevented from developing that and will be open to the divine feminine within them, the divine feminine with others. And I know this because that's the story of my life.
So, Stuart, this seems so important. Is this being taught anywhere besides in your book? Are there other men out there that know what you're talking about and teaching it in some fashion?
No. I believe I'm the only male practicing this on the planet. And while I have no problem attracting women students, I have not been able to attract any men students.
Wow. Well,
I have an oracle, a goddess, ready to teach men to do this, because you can't do this. I mean, I can't teach a man how to do this because I'm straight and don't have sex with men. And in order to do this, a man has to practice with a flesh and blood woman. And I have an oracle who is able to do that, not the woman I live with, not my crone mother, but one of my long-term students. But men aren't really interested in that. The average man just wants to fuck.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that. And, you know, it's so funny. I'm hearing you say this, and I know you probably don't know. I've said this on the show on occasion. But one of the things I have said for the longest time, and I didn't know the science of it to say it so eloquently as you, but I have long thought that if mothers had the opportunity to stay with their sons longer, to somehow have them indoctrinated into sexuality rather than, you know, boys learn this course, you know, wham, bam, thank you, man shit that they learn out in the world, in the patriarchal right. world. I mean, if they were really put in the hands of a sacred courtesan or someone like that, like a temple priestess, like we romantically think of as the Aphrodite priestesses, which, you know, we don't know for mm-hmm. sure. I don't think if they existed. But the way that exists in my mind, I thought that could make such a difference in how young boys grow up and how they see women and how women and men could experience sexuality so much differently, you know. There's no place for that in our society, because if somebody
not only is there
that,
no place, it would be illegal.
Yes, it would be illegal, or
it would
you
be
would
illegal.
Be. Yeah, you would be thrown in jail. You would be accused
right.
of abusing children,
right.
because their consciousness is so unevolved that they just wouldn't understand that this is not really about sex. You know,
about sex. It's about sex's role in human development, and it's also about developmental stages. All adolescent boys masturbate. And there's a reason for that, because this, you know, you learn to walk at a certain age, you learn to talk at a certain age. I mean, I was a pediatrician. Things are developmentally tasked at certain ages. So when I try to teach an older man how to do this, he's already past the time that he was meant to do this in his life.
Right.
And I really think the only solution is the next generation. Now, I also believe that postmenopausal women who are at their sexual peak and biologically adolescents who are at their sexual peak, back in the days prior to patriarchy, over 5,000 years ago, this was the normal activity.
Yeah. So the young boys were probably being trained by the postmenopausal women.
Exactly. Now, there's one other aspect to this that I think is very important that people also don't know about. There are some unique evolutionary characteristics of being a human being. We have an enormous brain compared to our hominid ancestors. We have menstruation and menopause, which is what allows for love. Do you understand how menstruation allows for love, which no other animal...
Well, why don't you tell me?
Most animals can only have sex biologically when they are ovulating and can make a baby. Most animals, sexuality and procreation are tied. That's what the religious right tells us. In human beings, that's not true. A human woman can have sex every day of her life if she chooses. She can only get pregnant 2 days of the month. So choice belongs to women by virtue of evolution. Human men are not that different from our previous ancestors. The way our previous ancestors had sex, a woman would go up to heat, and the men would line up and have sex one after the other, like in porno films. Most men are still there. Unless they learn about oxytocin, they won't leave that. How do men learn about oxytocin? One of the other characteristics that's different biologically from every other animal that ever evolved on this planet is that women have breasts. Other animals don't have breasts. A dog has a baby, puppies. The teats enlarge, the milk glands enlarge. That's when she has breasts. The babies are weaned, the milk glands go away, she's back to only nipples. Why do all human women have breasts for their entire life? And the answer is oxytocin. When you suck on your mother's breast, The mother has oxytocin released in her brain, so does the baby. When a man sucks on a woman's breast, when a woman sucks on a woman's breast, both the sucker and the suckee have oxytocin released in their brain. We have this incredible biological system that's just ignored.
Wow. And
so
probably,
if you have adolescent boys being taught to nurse, or for example, look at babies. Many people are upset when women breastfeed in public, which is insane. That's normal humanity. There are a subgroup of women that not only breastfeed for a year, but they breastfeed for 2, 3, 4 years, sometimes 5 years. What
and
those women are doing,
crazy.
People think they're crazy, but those women and those children know something that everybody else doesn't know, that oxytocin in the brain will increase their development. So let's say you have a boy who's being nursed by his mother till he's 5, and then when he's 13, he learns how to masturbate without ejaculating and with meditation and prayer, then that man is not going to be a slave or a warrior in the patriarchal system. John Lennon said, "What if they gave a war and nobody came? My books are about creating that world. They've been given to me by the Sheena, Divine Mother. This is where humanity will go."
So would you say, Stuart, that most people go through their lives and never really experience the oxytocin sex? It's always the adrenaline sex?
I would say almost all.
Okay.
And women know that there's more. Every woman I've ever been with, when I've taught them this and shared this with them, they said, I knew this existed. I knew it. I've just been waiting for it. And every single postmenopausal woman is indeed a goddess. We need to take power away from old men who are impotent and bitter and angry, so they send off young men to be maimed and killed in war, and tell terrible things about women who are postmenopausal, rather than honoring them as the appropriate decision makers of our people. Because postmenopausal women are not selfish. Postmenopausal women do not want to favor their children over the rest of the world. That's the problem with our system, with the thought disorder of patriarchy. It's the failure to use what evolution selected in humanity, which is lying dormant in every single woman's body.
You know, I find it incredible that what you're talking about, are they writing about is this in sexuality journals? I mean, is this really isn't out there anyplace?
It's only in my books. There's a little piece here and a little piece there, but nobody has put it together. They're not connecting the dots, and that's because nobody pays attention to me because I'm a pariah in society. I've been ostracized.
Right. Well, I read your bio, but you know what? Some of my best friends have been ostracized. Look at Father Roy Bourgeois and Matthew Fox. You know, they've been ostracized by, the Christian community for not obeying the church. So, you know, you're in good company.
Yes, if the culture is insane, it's not such a bad thing to be rejected by it.
Yeah, it's almost like a badge of honor, you know.
I'm happy in my personal life. I listen. I am surrounded by love. I live on love. I would love for more people to go to Amazon, look me up on Kindle, Berlin, Stuart Mark, and all my books are there. Actually, there's a fourth book that's called The Goddess in Her Fullness, The Evolutionary Advantage of Menopause, which was just recently added. But all my books now are e-books. I'm tired of spending money to print books up and then waiting to sell them one by one.
Absolutely. I think you would be a hero to a lot of women, you know. And I hope more women will learn about what you're writing because, I mean, and not just, you know, women my age, but women who are trying to raise sons, you know, so that, you know, they understand that there's some options out there.
The foreword to Sex Magic of the Bar Mitzvah Boy is directed to mothers and grandmothers. If it's a young woman in a relationship then they should read Sexual Secrets of Tantra Kabbalah, because it talks about the specifics of making love and how to release oxytocin in a woman's body and therefore release oxytocin in the man's body and share a synchronous state. I've had very lovely messages from people who have bought my book, shared it with their sex partner, and that it's transformed their life.
And it's actually a how-to. I mean, it's a step-by-step. You tell them how to achieve this.
Well, I'm kind of an academic, so I do like to give a little theory, but there is definitely a lot of specifics. Also, the very beginning of the book is channeled. It's written in the voice of the book, which is another version of the Divine Mother speaking through me.
Wow. Well, Stuart, we probably have about 10, 15 more minutes. Should we chat about every woman a goddess, every man a hero? I mean, what do you think is most important to cover in these last 15 minutes or so?
Well, I think that, and absolutely. I, you know, that was my autobiography. I wrote that book when I needed to get the message that had been given to me. The other books are kind of like a piece of that book exemplified, and also that book is kind of complex. The most important thing about that book is evolutionary biology and the goddess working together over through patriarchy. We've been talking about that. And then my visions, which were given to me by the Shekhinah to heal the world, apocrine sweat testing we've talked about, and I have had that U.S. patent since 2003. My website, hermeticdiagnostics.com, talks about all of those things, hermetic, H-E-R-M-E-T-I-C, diagnostics. But the aspect of that you didn't talk about was marijuana detection for acute marijuana intoxication. I have the most data on that, showing that the significant numbers that when you smoke marijuana, the active ingredient, THC for a psychoactive effect, is concentrated in apocrine sweat many times higher than it is in blood. So it's easy to detect, and then most, just as importantly, goes back down. So 2 to 3 hours later, a person is safe to be at work, safe to drive, and their test will be negative. Now, I've tried to license this patent, but I've been unsuccessful. It costs like $600,000 to even register with the FDA for a new test, and I don't have the money to develop a prototype and to do the appropriate testing. The preliminary paper that I worked with Dr. Mahmoud El-Saleh, who was for many years the only scientist that the U.S. government allowed to grow marijuana, he was very supportive, but the paper was not published. The paper was not published, I believe, for political reasons, because my idea is that marijuana should be legal and that this test will aid in its legalization. So right now, my next plan of attack is to maybe write to police chiefs in Colorado, Washington, California, because police, I have very mixed feelings about police, but I think most police in general just want to keep the peace and do their job, even though police are sometimes a very patriarchal controlling element. But one thing they do have is they have the juice to get things done.
Right.
And if there's one thing that could come out of this talk, is if one of your listeners was connected to a company that could, you know, that already makes diagnostic devices. I mean, it's basically the same technology as a urine pregnancy test, but for marijuana, for THC, and in the armpit. So it's not really that difficult to do, at least certainly not conceptually, but practically it takes resources that I don't have.
Sure. Well, and you know, maybe the timing is right now with marijuana being legalized all over. I want to hook you up with one of my other guests, Dr. David Hillman. I'll tell you about him off the air, but he's... he's a biologist, and you know he's also he's one of these people who have been rejected in society too because he dared to, you know, sort of go against the status quo. I mean, he even had to pull stuff about drugs in the ancient world out of his thesis in order to graduate, you know, because because academia didn't, you know, even though he could support his thesis, you know, they didn't, it went against their view of the ancient world, you know, even though he could substantiate what he said. So anyway, I want to try to remember to do that. But, you know, there's one other thing in your talking points that I found interesting before you go, if you could elaborate on a little bit. Talk a little bit more about liminal time. And also, I'd love to hear more about your experiences of the Elohim.
Okay. I started out as a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn. I graduated high school at 16, college at 20, medical school at 24, residency at 27. I was very left-brained, but I was also very intuitive and sensitive. I went to Hamilton College, which at that time had a coordinate college, Kirkland College, which was a very liberal feminist school, and so that's probably where I first started on my path to be a feminist, because I listened to all my girlfriends like a girlfriend would, and, you know, listen to their complaints about men in general. So what happens in my development is that because I lost my career as a pediatrician for discovering the secret of breastfeeding, I went to medical school and was taught how important breastfeeding was. I went to Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. I met the mavens of breastfeeding, Drs. Fleisch and Gordon, but they never taught me how to teach a woman how to breastfeed. So when I was practicing medicine, I didn't teach that because I didn't know how to teach it. And I went to the best schools, and I only did what I knew was right. So if a mother had a breastfeeding problem, I referred her to a woman lactation consultant with the pumps and all of that. And So I found myself on a house call with a mother who couldn't breastfeed. In fact, she was sent home from the hospital less than 24 hours, and she had never successfully breastfed. And she called me the next day, you know, her baby won't breastfeed. So I went out to the house. I examined the baby. The baby was normal, well-hydrated, had a good suck. And I said, well, I have a lactation consultant. No, I don't want to do that. And then I said, well, then you have to bottle feed her and use formula. I didn't want to do that. A normal physician would have said, you have to choose. And I've never been normal. And that's probably one of the first times I heard the voice of the goddess speaking to me in my mind. And all of a sudden, it was like I had downloaded a whole book. And I knew exactly what to do. And I offered this to her. The way a bottle works is through gravity. Baby's mouth sucks on it. It flows in. Baby doesn't have to work. A breast doesn't release milk until it's brought to milk letdown. Sucking on the breast releases oxytocin in the brain, causes the smooth muscle in the breast ductus to contract, and it expels breast into the baby's mouth. I offered this woman an opportunity, if that's really what she wanted, that I could do that for her, but it certainly was not conventional, and she didn't even have to consider it. She wanted me to do that. 30 seconds later, her baby was breastfeeding perfectly because in the past, that's what was done. Someone else sucked on the breast, brought it to milk letdown, put the baby on, breastfeeding successful. There has to have been a way that every human being breastfed. And now, nobody knows how to breastfeed because that link has been broken and Nestle makes fortunes selling formula all over the world and 1.5 million babies die from diarrhea and dehydration. And so because of that, I lost my career.
So, Stuart, are you saying that you had to put your lips on her breast to start the milk flow? Is that what you're saying? And so what then, she reported you?
Yes, because most likely, when I left, she was thrilled her baby was breastfeeding, and in my naivete, I thought the baby would have successfully learned, and I had never done this before. And then most likely what happened is when the baby didn't breastfeed again, she asked her husband to do it, and he freaked out. And all of a sudden, what I did was not voluntary, but sexual violation.
Right. So it got turned on its head. Everything.
Right.
Yeah, probably
so that
people
brought me to a situation where I no longer had my position in society, my status, all of the training that I had was useless to me, and so I had to do something else. And that something else was to use, I mean, at that time, I didn't know everything I've told you today. I didn't know what breastfeeding does to the human mind through the release of oxytocin. I had no clue about that. But because I became an outcast, I was able to learn it in my personal life and then able to write all these books. So this was, although it was not exactly fun, this is what the Shekhinah had for me as her prophet.
So this was sort of the silver lining in your cloud, that you got all of this.
I don't think of it as a silver lining. I think of it as what the goddess needed me to do in my life.
Right. So tell us a little bit more about the liminal time, I think you call it.
Yes. So we pretty much live in time space. You know, 1 minute goes into the next, 1 hour goes into the next. You have very rigid ideas about logic, about reality. And what happens when you have a shared oxytocin state with someone, that changes. So that, I talked about how in adrenaline sex, men get tired of women. In oxytocin sex, the longer you've been with someone, the better sex becomes, because you're sharing a state. And so that each time you do it, you go back to the last time you were there together. So that liminal time, or that experience of the shared synchronous alignment of two brains, becomes dominant in your life, and what happens in between kind of fades a little bit. And that's when creativity and mystery. So I would say, if you ask me to define liminal time, I would say liminal time is where people go and they dream. I would say liminal time is where people go in between lives. So, for example, I will give you an example. I shared very pronounced sexual experiences in liminal time that were related around Samhain and flying ointment, and thinking of witches during the 300-year murder of women as witches for practicing earth religion, and their experience of putting a combination of chemicals onto broomsticks into their vaginas, which is particularly for ergots a much safer way to absorb it than through the gastrointestinal tract. And so then I met in liminal time, while I was imagining that experience, which is in liminal time, who are still back in the time of the burning. And so my partner and I shared the ecstasy and bliss of our experience with the witches in their experience. And so then when they went back to where their waking life, I had a sense of that they were loved and that they were beautiful, which is what sex magic is all about, because the natural state of our soul is feeling loved and feeling beautiful. Men never feel loved and beautiful. So basically, what you can do is you can go back and forth in time in your own life, in the lives of people around you, you know, thousands of years, and affect people who are still there in that time. They haven't disappeared. They're still there in their time. We're here in our time. Liminal time, especially on certain holidays like Beltane and Samhain, the space between worlds is thinner. And when the space between worlds is thinner, it's very powerful to go back and share that love and light. That's what liminal time is. Liminal time is the real reality. This is a construct.
So have you written much about this liminal time, or being able to access other, I guess I'm going to use the word dimensions or times, in liminal time? I mean,
I write about liminal time in Sexual Secrets of Tantra Kabbalah, but I haven't divulged what I just divulged to you on the radio to anyone that's not in my inner circle.
Okay. Well, I find this all very interesting stuff. And actually, you know, the thing with the ergot on the broomstick handle, again, Dr. Mm-hmm. David Hillman, one of the things he was talking about was, you know, some of the ancient witch cults, you know, that they used, mm-hmm. they basically put stuff like snake venom on, you know, on dildos to be able, right. And then inserted it to, yeah. You know, if for either medication or for trance work. You know, interesting stuff, but certainly not the kind
yeah,
of thing that...
Yeah, because those mucous membranes are really good at absorption directly into the bloodstream, bypasses the gastrointestinal tract, but everything you absorb in your gastrointestinal tract goes through the liver. The liver detoxifies things. So
right.
it's avoiding that and putting it directly into the bloodstream. And they also used to put things on skin to be absorbed. As an example, in Roman times, the gladiators would have their sweat collected, and it would be given to women to put on their skin to absorb the hormone.
Like an aphrodisiac or something, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, Stuart, this has been interesting. I am so glad I had you on the show. I actually want to read your books. I haven't had time to read them before the show. Life has just been crazy busy the last year, but... you know, I can't help but think that what you have said to me tonight is so important, and you need a much larger audience for this, and I hope you find it, because, you know, now is the time. You know, as the patriarchy dies, we need to fill the void, so to speak. We need new stories. We need new ways of living. We need new, we need a new normal. You know, and
yeah.
I think some of the stuff that you're talking about, I don't know, I don't think it's way out there. Maybe I've just been on the fringe of the fringe so long. but you know,
I'm very
articulate,
and I know a lot of things, and I integrate left brain and right brain. No one else has ever integrated sex, spirituality, and science. For the first part of humanity, sex was the dominant force under the goddess spirituality was. And under patriarchy gave us violence, slavery, war, economics, misery.
Right.
But it eventually also gave us science. And
yeah.
science, combined with spirituality, combined with sexuality, will overturn patriarchy. And
I think so.
The key to that is, because I'm very optimistic. I mean, I speak to the Elohim and they tell me, but it's a done deal. They, you know, they see my frustration and my impatience, and they tell me it's done. I don't need to worry about it. It's already done. But,
can they
you
tell
know,
you, give you a time frame, or are we going to see it
no,
now?
No, they never do that. They never do that. But one of the key things is to connect sex to love and sever it almost completely from procreation. Because
right.
there's too many people in the world, and the entire resources of the planet is being eaten. And
right.
every animal is being violated for human eating.
Right.
So replacement population for women is 2.2 births per woman. So if, and it's already happening, really. There are many women who are refusing to have children.
Yeah.
But when my apocrine sweat test discovers the ovulation protein and it discovers the STD markers, and you can just swab the armpits of anyone you want to have sex with and know that their body fluids are safe, and a woman can know herself, not somebody else telling her, if she's ovulating or not, and if she's not ovulating, she'll have sex, and if she doesn't want to have children when she's ovulating, she won't have sex, then it's not inconceivable that the replacement value of 2.2 will drop to 1.1 pregnancies per woman in the world, and then instead of the human population dramatically increasing, it'll drop.
Right.
If it drops to 1.1, it would half with every generation. And within 3 or 4 generations, the world will be back in balance. Patriarchy took a long time to get here. It's not going to go away overnight.
True. True. Well, and, you know, and there's also the education aspect. They say, the, you know, when women are educated, they have fewer children, too. So, you
absolutely.
Know,
absolutely.
you know, another way to, you know, to cut down on the population. Well, and Kathy, on a previous show, has said that, you know, and if, I'm sorry, I forget now how she came to this. I'd have to go back and listen. But she said she thought we were really going to see significant change that was going to, you know, bolster our confidence that this is all going to happen the way we hope it's going to happen in about 14 years from now. So I think, you know, we might still be around 14 years from now. You know, maybe we will really see the proof in the pudding, so to speak. You know, we don't have to just have faith that, you know, patriarchy is dying and this change we want will come.
Well, my current mother, Cheryl, is much younger now than when I met her, you know, 9-some-odd years ago. We are not supposed to die so young. The reason why we die so young is because we have so much stress in our life. Testosterone, adrenaline, and cortisol is a death match, a death mix for everyone. But you combine testosterone, oxytocin, and endorphins, and it makes you young. So
if we were having more sex,
if we were having oxytocin sex,
and how do you get endorphins? How do you...
Endorphins are released both during sex and exercise.
Okay, so if we exercise a lot, had oxytocin sex, we'd live to be 150.
That's not unreasonable. That's my plan.
Wow. Well, you know what? I want to get off the hamster wheel. You know, I'm really interested in this stuff you're talking about, Stuart. And I'm going to be talking to all my girlfriends about it, and I'm sure they're going to be
looking for your book.
May
the goddess bless you. May the goddess bless you.
Well, same to you. I'm so glad we spoke. I'm so glad you shared all of this on the show. And let's stay in touch and let me know how things are going. I'm sure I'll see you on Facebook and stuff. But let me know if there are any new developments, and you're always welcome back on the show to talk more about this, okay?
That'd be wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good night.
Shalom.
Well, I sure enjoyed that, and I sincerely am looking forward to reading those books. When I finish the third 50 Shades of Grey, which I am halfway through, I'm going to be going to Stuart's books. So to wrap up tonight, we don't have a lot of time left. I have to ask you, have you had a chance yet to pick up my new book, Goddess Calling? It does show us how we can have an alternative to patriarchy and how goddess spirituality does set us free. Stuart just gave us another example of how we can set ourselves free from patriarchy with oxytocin sex. You know, so there's one more thing to add to the liberation theology of the sacred feminine, and that is theology with an A. And I am lucky to say I've had some great endorsements. I've had endorsements from Jean Houston, Selena Fox, Zee Budapest, Barbara Walker, Isadora Forrest, lots of other women who I certainly respect, and I'm sure you do too. So I hope you will pick it up. You know, that would be a great favor to me if you do, because the more books I sell, I have a better chance of the publisher doing the next book. So you know, keep that in mind if you're looking for something for yourself or for a friend. Now, tune in next week as we celebrate the Red Tent Movement with women who facilitate those incredible women gatherings called Red Tents all around the country. We will be talking to about half a dozen women and learning just why the Red Tent phenomena is so important to women everywhere. I think that about wraps it up for tonight. Also coming up later in the month, we will have Phyllis Carratt on the show. So we have a great, great May for you. And to close the show, I just want to remind you about our mottos. The first one is from Gandhi: first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And Monique Wittig, she said, there was a time when you were not a slave. Remember that. You walked alone, full of laughter. You bathed bare-bellied. You say you've lost all recollection of it. Remember. You say there were no words to describe this time. You say it doesn't exist. But remember. Make an effort to remember, or failing that, invent. So, listeners, I hope you will not forget the three F's. Yes, please click the follow button on my show page so you don't miss news of the wonderful guests that are on the show each week. The second F is to please become a friend of the growing family of Voices of the Sacred Feminine listeners across the globe. And the third F is for Facebook. Please like my pages on Facebook. There's the Voices of the Sacred Feminine radio page. There's my Karen Tate page. There's the Walking in Ancient Path page for my second book, the Goddess Calling page for my new book, and the Sacred Places of Goddess 108 Destinations page. That was for my first book. So I hope you have a wonderful week. You know, it's been crazy, but I am confident that things are going to go our way. As Anne Baring, a wonderful foremother, has said, she believes the goddess consciousness is helping us along. And you know what? I think it truly is. We are not alone in this. This is her time. She will not be denied. So thank you very much, listeners, and I am going to close the show tonight. You know, I feel like doing something funny from Celia. Why don't we do... Okay, hold on. Since we've been talking about sexy things tonight, she's got something really funny called My Pussy. This is by Celia from her... you know, her raunchy little album, Naughty in Pink. Okay, here's Celia's My Pussy.
My pussy has a first name, it's P-U-S-S-Y. My pussy has a last name, it's P-U-S-S-Y. I love my little pussy, I love her very much. You can look at my pussy, but please don't touch. La 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 la. I love my little pussy, I love that she is mine. When nobody is looking, I pet her all the time. Maybe I'll share my pussy, and if you're really nice, you can pet my little pussy, but you can't pet twice. La 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 la. She's my pussy, she's the bestest pussy around. When you pet her, she makes a gurgling, purring sound. She's my pussy, she's soft and cuddly and sweet. When in trouble, she always lands on her feet. My pussy likes to sing, my pussy likes to dance. My pussy every time I get the chance. I stroke my little pussy and give her a toy squeeze. You can pet my little pussy, but no pictures, please. La 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 la. My pussy doesn't scratch, my pussy doesn't bite. My pussy is nocturnal, she can stay up through the night. She likes to play with catnip and with ping pong balls. You can pet her still, my pussy, but she's bound to fall. La 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 la. She's my pussy, she's the bestest pussy around. She can swim, she gets soaking wet, but she'll never drown. She's my pussy, I'll stay with her to the end. She's my pussy, she's my bestest of friends. My pussy gets real clean with a lot of licks. She can sit and beg, roll over, 'cause I taught her lots of tricks. She always does her business in the box. I love my little pussy, 'cause my pussy rocks. La, 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 la. She's my pussy.